time for our weekly catch-up with ACT Party Deputy Leader Brooke Van Velden.
Now it's time for our chat with one of the most important minor parties about the political hot potatoes of today and tomorrow. This week, News and Editorial Director Jessica Hopkins spoke to ACT Party Leader David Seymour about ACT's opposition to the passing of the Fair Pay Agreements Bill that will set up a legal framework for collective bargaining across entire industries. They also discussed the government's response to Iran and ACT's decision to block a unified parliamentary message condemning Iranian authorities until another MP took over the motion from Golraz Gharahman.
First of all, did you get up to anything for Halloween?
Oh, no. We've been so spooked by this government and its taxes and inflation, we just stayed home.
Well, I wanted to talk to you about the Fair Pay Agreements Bill that passed last week. ACT has opposed Fair Pay Agreements and has said that they would be gone within the first 100 days of any government they are a part of. Why is ACT against Fair Pay Agreements?
Well, I think you actually have to ask, why would you want them? All policy should start with a problem that needs to be solved. Now, Labor and particularly the unions that support them have said that fair pay agreements are needed because they will raise wages and raise productivity. And yet, if you look hard at the data over the last 40 years, we've had a period of low productivity in the 70s and 80s, which was actually the time that we had something very similar to fair pay agreements. We got rid of that in 1991 and moved to individualised employment agreements through the Employment Contracts Act. And subsequent to that, two things improved. One was worker productivity. People were getting jobs where they had better equipment to work for and better ideas for producing stuff, and they produce more. The other thing that happened is that the workers' share of the economy actually grew. So this whole theory that if we get back to big national awards, or a lot of people probably won't know what that is, but the idea of awarding a contract for a whole group of workers nationwide, if we get back to that, then somehow workers are going to be better off. Well, that's not actually supported by the evidence of the past 40 years. Then you start looking for other explanations, and unfortunately, and you don't want to be attacking people's motivations, but you've got a Labor Party where 30% of Labor MPs are former union organisers, and yet only 0.026% of the New Zealand population are union organisers, and you have to wonder if this is not a piece of legislation designed to advance the private interests of the union movement, who will have a much bigger role to play, rather than the public interests of workers who ultimately want to be able to go to work, have at least a bearable time, if not a good time, stay safe and bring home an income that allows them to achieve their other goals in life.
David, you regularly engage with local businesses in your community of Epsom. What are some of the concerns they have raised about fair pay agreements?
Well, it's not just Epsom, it's up and down the country. I mean, what you've got is a scenario where instead of having a relationship between an employer and employee, where basically you want to get stronger together over time, all of a sudden you've got this extra factor that somebody, possibly far away in another part of the country, initiates a fair pay agreement for, say, all hairdressers or hospitality workers or whatever, all bus drivers. And all of a sudden, the terms and conditions of your employment are being negotiated somewhere else. And what's more, it puts a floor on it such that, if you are someone who works hard and performs and wants to do well and so on, then you may find that actually that doesn't really leave you better off anymore. And that's the second big objection that people are raising, not just employers, by the way, also employees, that it's about values. Do your efforts in life make a difference? Do your choices today affect how tomorrow turns out? Or is it all just kind of a bit of a blancmange? And when you put a whole sector on the same contracts nationwide, it's a bit more blancmange. And, Michael Wood says this. He calls it wage compression. What he means by that is if you try hard, you'll get a bit more, but if you don't, you'll get a bit more too. So what's the difference?
What would ACT then do to support workers and ensure that they are satisfied with their working conditions and also earning an income that's in line with the rising cost of living?
Well, I mean, that asks the question of the entire economic policy suite. But first and foremost, workers are being taxed more. You know, I mean, if you look at the amount of tax that people are paying, it's gone up 10.7% in the last year. The cost of living generally has gone up 7.7%, so tax is actually one of the leading causes of increased cost. Then you look at what tax policy would do. If you're a middle income earner, say a nurse on 70 grand, you know, you get to keep an extra $2,300 a year of your own money, and that's much better than having it, you know, given to you by from someone else via the government. So we'd let people keep a lot more of their own money by cutting taxes. And people say that's dramatic. Well, actually, we're just going some way back to where we were pre-COVID by reducing taxes that have increased dramatically over the last couple of years. Second of all, I think we've got to ask, you know, how is it that people get wealthy? And we've got lots of studies of this around the world over the last 100 years, in fact, several hundred years. People get wealthy when you have good sources of investment, lots of entrepreneurship, so that there are new jobs with high with a lot of investment capital and better ideas, and those are where you start to go along to work and you can actually produce more stuff in the day, more stuff that's more valuable to sell, and then you can take home more money yourself. At the moment, you know, New Zealand's very hostile to investment from abroad. We have a system of regulations that mean people spend a large portion of their time in compliance activity rather than productive activity. And we also increasingly have an education system that is focused on all sorts of goals but doesn't seem to be equipping people with the basic numeracy and literacy that you need to even get on the starting line. So, you know, it's a combination of making it easier to invest, making it easier to form businesses, making it easier to do business, and getting education focused on the skills that are essential that we're currently missing out on. You do all that stuff, people will end up earning more money over time. If you just try and fiddle with the labour laws, then, you know, you'll rearrange the deck chairs, but you're not actually going to make the boat go faster, so to speak.
I'll have to move on to the other topic I want to talk about today, which is the government's response to condemning Iran. National has actually agreed with Labour that it was justified to hold off on strongly condemning the actions of Iranian authorities. Just this week, New Zealand suspended its bilateral human rights dialogue with Iran. So does ACT agree that we should have moved sooner to harshly condemn Iran despite those New Zealanders being overseas?
Well, I find this whole situation really interesting. The Prime Minister has never actually said that she was pulling her punches because of the two New Zealanders stuck in Iran. But she's been very happy to suggest it and allow media to report it. And if you think about what she's really saying, I don't think it's plausible that the Prime Minister of New Zealand would have a strategy of being really kind to people until we get what we want and then changing our stance. Because if it's seriously the strategy of the New Zealand government, good luck negotiating next time there's an incident like this. Because people will just say, well, remember that last time in Iran, you were really nice, and then you baited and switched as soon as you got what you wanted. I mean, that's not a credible strategy in life, in politics, or in diplomacy. So I wonder if what really happened is the Prime Minister and Labour got caught on the hop. They didn't think that Iran would be a big issue, even though I don't know how you couldn't. And then after the facts, when these hostages were released, they put it about but didn't actually say it. We couldn't be tough before, but we can now. The truth is that they just missed it. They were late. And I'm proud that ACT was there, requesting meetings with the ambassador, dialoguing with him. And then when he gave completely farcical responses, such as Mahsa Amini just lost consciousness, which is what he said in his letter to me, we said, look, this guy's not here to have serious dialogue. Kick him out. I think that was the right way to go all along.
Well, speaking of negotiations, so ACT initially threatened to block a unified parliamentary message condemning Iranian authorities. until another MP took over the motion from Gulruz Gahaman, or unless she apologised for interrupting a speech you made in the House. So why did you believe it was appropriate to address these concerns during that time?
Well, I think the question is, you know, first of all, it's not just interrupting. It is breaking a rule that everyone else respects, breaking it twice, getting reprimanded by the Speaker. The right thing for her to do would be to say, yeah, you know, that was a bit wrong. I'm sorry about that. And we said, look, if you want to move a motion, which, by the way, is also a privilege, then that's fine and we fully support you, but we need to have a chat about that little incident because, you know, if everyone behaved like that all the time, Parliament wouldn't work. Now, at that point, rather than, you know, saying, yes, sorry, that was wrong, but let's get on with it, Iran's really important right now, she chose to go and grandstand in the media and say, act's blocking me and blah, 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 and attacking me and all the rest, which was really disappointing. You know, she could have sorted it in a two-minute phone call. But instead of doing that, she decided to grandstand in the media. And in the end, you know, I think people will come to see that as a judgment of her character, which is a shame. But actually, we got a really good outcome, which was that the motion was moved by Nanaia Mahuta, who is the foreign minister. And I think it was much more powerful coming from the minister of the government, rather than, you know, a backbench MP, albeit she obviously has a clear interest in Iran.
Gulruz Gahaman is the only Iranian-New Zealand MP, so do you think that it would then make sense for her to be able to deliver this unified condemnation?
Yeah, you'd think so. And, you know, if you're also the person who's broken the rules, who's been really rude and nasty, but, you know, you'd say, yeah, this is, I was wrong about that. I'm going to make a two-minute phone call, sort it out, say I'm sorry, and get on with the business. But, you know, instead decided to grandstand, and I think people will come to their own conclusion about that over time.
Do you think that it's valid for Gulruz Gahaman to say that you put your personal feelings above the lives of Iranians?
No, not at all. I think that's what she did, you know, because, again, she was clearly in the wrong. The Speaker said that she was in the wrong. Everyone who follows the way Parliament works knows that she was wrong, and she was incredibly rude. So, you know, generally when you do something like that, you should make it right anyway. All she had to do was right so we could get on with business. But, you know, like I say, the reason we're having this conversation is she didn't do that. Instead, she chose to go and grandstand in the media and I guess ultimately you know, scoring political points was more important than getting on with business, which she could have easily done.
Do you think that this issue could have been raised with the Greens and Gulruz Gahaman another time? Why did you think it was the best time, I guess, to address it during this motion?
Well, it actually was raised immediately after the incident, and she was just extremely rude at the time. So you know, that's unfortunately just the way it rolls. But look, I know people are going to make up their own minds, and I guess they should just ask themselves, you know, if Iran is so important, why didn't she just ring up and say, yeah, I was wrong, sorry, but we appreciate your support, let's get on with it, and that would have been fine. But in the end, you know, we ended up with Nanaia Mahuta doing the interview, doing the statement, and it was actually a better outcome.
That was News and Editorial Director Jess Hopkins' regular chat with the ACT Party.
That was Deputy Leader Brooke Van Velden from the ACT Party.